Good morning, Dr. Bedea here for another bi-weekly episode of Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches podcast that started last year, where we bring some of the thought leaders on actually how to fix healthcare, not their clinical prowess or even being doctors, but people who are really interested in changing. And one of those real changers, real thought leaders in this, and even probably even more of a rebel than I am, is Dr. John Nort. Dr. Nort's an orthopedic spine surgeon in Coral Gables here in the Miami area. Dr. Nort did his medical school at University of Florida, okay, so for you Gators. And then he went to University of Colorado for orthopedic residency and finished up at Southern Illinois University. And he's focused his practice on spine surgery for the last 30 plus years. But importantly, and we'll talk to him about this, is he was president of the Florida Orthopedic Society. And that is, I think, Dr. Nort will tell us, but I think that's the second or third largest society in the country. So, Dr. Nort, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. This provides a platform, and in 15 minutes is too short.
Before that's I
become right. President of the Florida Orthopedic Society.
We're just going to continue. So
I learned about the economics of medicine, and to give a short version of it, Medicare, since 1965, when it was instituted, since 1990, 95, for 30 plus years, it's reduced its reimbursement rate 70%, and all insurance companies have followed. So the economically strangled doctors cannot get out of medical school and pay off their loans of $200,000 to $300,000. So they're forced to go and work for a corporate profit center, hospital, what have you, or an equity partnership or personal injury. And the problem there is now they are not sovereign anymore. Now they don't have a practice where people come to them. The people that come to them come because of the entity they work for. The hospital makes 5 to 10 times what their salary is with ancillary billing, other consults, infectious disease, MRIs, operating room, et cetera, et cetera. And so long story short, they have no control, and most of them just do a surgery and walk out. So they don't have the luxury of a private practice and the sovereignty of a private practice about whether to do it or not. Their salary is based on RVUs, based on CPT codes.
So for the public, RVUs are. And by the way, John, you're. We need a little more light on you. So maybe your team there can help you get some light on you. There we go. So you know, technical issues aside, you're bringing up some really important points. So, and I'm hoping that some of the folks in the public, you know, besides physicians, because really this relies on the public learning and being engaged. So for the public, RVUs are relative value units.
There's a point system for every CPT code or current procedural terminology, and it's accumulation. If you get 12 to 15,000 RVUs, justifies your check every 2 weeks and your bonus at the end of the year. The University of Miami works that way, to my chagrin, and also every employed physician. And most doctors don't even understand this.
So the difference, right, Dr. Nord, is that physician in private practice, like you and I, you know, we're not, you know, looking at our stopwatch at 5 p.m., right? I mean, it's a whole different mentality of the patient, and not that these physicians aren't great caring physicians, but it's a different mentality, correct?
They work for the man, okay?
Yeah.
They do not work for themselves, and we're in our second or third or fourth generation of doctors that don't even understand what private practice is all about. They never made a payroll. They never paid overhead. They never paid anything. And the bottom line is they're just happy to go home and get a check. And I can't blame them for that. Yeah, our academy the Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons has dropped the ball. AMA, only 16% of doctors belong to the AMA.
Wow.
But I wrote something about 2012 about Medicare reimbursement, and it's down so much. It's an article, AAOS Now, and I think I may send it to you. But anyway, long story short, the economic sovereignty of private practice has been destroyed, and doctors now just work for a paycheck. And it's pretty sad because that's all they know. And they are told by somebody over their shoulder, you have to see this patient. You got 4 minutes. You got 18 more people to see. And that's it.
So, and John, really, I mean, do you think that this is, I mean, is this reversible? Because I'll tell you, I have a colleague who's going to be joining me in September. I'd like to make that announcement public. I have a colleague, Dr. Joel Peterson, will be joining me. He's doing a shoulder and elbow fellowship at HSS. And now he is one of this generation that I think is understanding these problems. So I don't think it's necessarily that we've lost the game. I think there is young people who are starting to realize that. Would you agree? Or do you think it's...
Yeah, we're still in charge if we want to be in charge.
Right.
And, you know,
but do you think people coming out of training, though, do you think people coming out of training realize this and that the pendulum may swing the other way?
I don't think that. They're trying to pay off their debt. When I went to medical school in 6970, University of Florida, my medical tuition for medical school was $900 a year. And now it's $50,000. Go figure. Why is that?
Yeah,
there's a lot of forces, government grants and all sorts of stuff. And the colleges and universities raising the bar every year to take care of themselves. And by default, they are ruining medicine. They removed, as you and I have both coined the phrase, in the trenches. They've filled up the trenches and put us into a building.
Well, but, you know, shout out to my alma mater, NYU School of Medicine, is now free. So I think that and a few other privates are following suit. If we can keep the cost of medical education reasonable, then people can go into perhaps, you know, lesser paying specialties because they want to. They want to be a pediatrician. They want to be a psychiatrist. And we that's what we need in our society, correct?
And they should be. They should be. It's nice to hear that. That would lessen the pressure. But patients need to know how the system works.
Yeah.
And I don't know who would be responsible for telling them that, but they need to be aware. The last thing
we are, that's why we're doing this, right?
That's right. And the doctor, the patient, the one thing that hasn't gone away is the patient still trusts the doctor.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for saying that, Dr. Nord. That is absolutely true. So let's get to some action items here. So give me three succinct initiatives that we can actually enact if we have help, you know, from our legislators, et cetera. What three things do you think we can do to lower healthcare costs and make it more efficient?
Well, to digress for about 2 seconds,
okay.
All the people, the House and the Senate, once you get elected, they have to get reelected. How do they get reelected? Money, donations, and lobbyists hold sway on all those people. Now, the lobbyist in healthcare, in insurance, hospitals, and pharmacy.
True, but in the end, you said it yourself, they have to be reelected. And the public, the problem is the public as an engaged popular media hasn't brought out these issues.
They need to, that's where I'm going. They need to know that because unfortunately, the healthcare lobby in Washington, D.C. spends more money every year than aerospace, defense, gas, and oil combined.
I know. It is incredible.
A lot of cash flow. And anybody going to step in the way of that is going to have some gumption to do it. So
give us 3 points. And I think you have, you're formulating one. What would it be three actionable items? Number one.
Accountability for a hospital. I'd say out of 800,000 spinal fusions done, spine surgeries done every year, half of them don't need to be done.
What would you say is the bullet point objective here then? Number one.
Well, I would educate the patient.
Okay.
As to by our organizations, which have been a little weak.
Yep.
And educate the patient as to what's going on so they're aware. I saw something, somebody in Spain can get a total hip for $7,000 instead of $40,000 here in the States. Now, is that cost because of what? I don't know. There's a lot of fake surgeries done. Sacroiliac joint fusions is a fake surgery. Totally fake.
Yeah. Well,
doesn't exist. So the industry has created a lot of this problem, and they need to have their feet held to the fire. Correct payments for doctors rather than nickel diming them is really, really, really important.
Okay, so is that number two? I'm gonna hold you to this. I'm gonna be a tougher host.
That's fine. You're helping me. So
number two would be correct. So you can expand on that. Appropriate payments for physicians.
Right. Governor Cuomo of New York sanctioned United Healthcare in 2009 for using a company called Nginx. Nginx downcoded, so they paid less.
Yeah.
Cuomo found out that United Healthcare owned Nginx. And so therefore he fined them $20 million, something like that. So now there's a website called fairhealthconsumer.org. And you can look it up and see what real indemnity coverage is. It's not Medicare and it's not Blue Cross or anything. It's true indemnity healthcare. And we could get back to that and have our organized medicine, AAOS and AMA, do something, and the Florida Orthopedic Society do something that would change things. But it's going to take a big push, and to force them or ask them to have a priorities is going to be a tough one.
Well, look, until I spoke to you, I wasn't aware of that website. So here is the key, herein lies the objective, right? Is it's education. And you mentioned it. Your first point was educate the patient, probably via organized medicine. Number two is correct payments. And you brought up an example of what, and as you know, United Healthcare vis-a-vis Optum is really under the fire now. We know that. And we're going to try to hold them accountable. So what would be number three, Dr. Nort?
Well, I think we have, what did I say? Education of the patient.
Yep. Getting correct payment for correct physicians. Payments.
I think accountability.
Okay.
Accountability, hospitals, insurances, and everything needs to be put together. I'd say over half the spine surgeries being done don't have to be done, yet they're approved by insurance companies. And the sad part about it, this is a kind of a long answer, but the MRI is the best and worst thing that ever happened to spine surgery. A total joint can be easily figured out by looking at an X-ray and they can't walk. That's a given. Spine surgery is very intellectual, and you can look at a terrible spine, and I tell people that spine is as old as you are. But the bottom line is when they start doing surgeries based on MRIs alone, without examining, without a positive neurological deficit, that's a problem. It really is.
Agreed. Well, we see that in every field. I mean, we are a fee-for-service system, and we know that we have to make some major changes.
35% of normal people off the street, to summarize several papers on MRIs, 35% of normal people off the street with no back pain have something on their MRI that justifies surgery, and there's nothing wrong. And I came up with I was in court the other day, and I came up with this idea. Well, think of it, the MRI is a check engine light. It goes off. What does it mean? Is it broken?
The sensor is off.
The sensor is off, but an MRI is like a check engine light. It's not a great way to operate or make a diagnosis. It substantiates. I practiced for 10 years before MRIs existed, and we figured stuff out.
MRIs
substantiated that, but we've lost that completely, and that has to be made clear to patients. The MRI, I have people coming in, can I get an MRI? And they want it as a screening test. And you see where that's going down the rabbit hole.
Right, exactly. Well, yeah, I talk about that in one of the chapters of my book, Healthcare from the Trenches. I talk, and you which you had a chance to read. And I talk about the overutilization, of diagnostic studies. And the person who's going to act upon the study should be ordering the test, not the overworked primary care doctors.
Or not the chiropractor.
Yeah, well, that we could have a whole show on that one, right, John?
Well, but I don't mean I'll tell you a little story about chiropractors. You know how many chiropractors it takes to put in a light bulb?
How many?
Takes one, but it takes 8 visits.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Well, that is a whole other topic. So I'm gonna give you my 3 points because we're gonna be wrapping up.
Go.
3 points. The first one, I'm gonna reiterate what you said first, is public education. That's why we're here, right? That's why we have this podcast, and I encourage people. We had a little technical difficulty, but you can see some of the great points that Dr. North brought up. So please share this if you think these points are of interest, because public education is first. Number two, right clinician at the right time. Dr. North alluded to that. Yes, there is a role for chiropractic manipulation, perhaps but the reality is when you're having a significant spine problem, you don't want to go to an orthopedist. You want to go to an orthopedic spine surgeon or a neurosurgeon who focuses on spine. And the third one is we need oversight, not authorization. Authorization is really creating too many hurdles. What we need is oversight. And as Dr. North said, we're doing way too many, say, sacroiliac joint surgery, right? So we need the oversight. But if you keep putting these silly authorizations with people who don't have medical training, all that does is actually drive up cost, paradoxically.
Right.
And so I want to wrap it. I'm going to give you the last word, Dr. North.
Just to finish up, I did a video called License to Harm.
Yes.
And it's on YouTube. I did it 6 years ago about this very thing. It's about 8 or 10 minutes long. License to Harm on YouTube. And
I encourage everyone to look at that video. You know, we can devote 8 or 10 minutes of our time to understand what is approaching 20% of our economy, 20% of our GDP in the United States. This is not sustainable. That's why we're here. Please join us again in 2 weeks for another episode of Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches. Thank you all. Thank you, Dr. North.
Thank you.